It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Ah, with Phil Goff, the Mayor of Auckland. Hello there.
Mikey, how are you?
Very well, sir. How are you?
I'm very good. Beautiful day in Auckland.
Beautiful day in the city.
Looking out and seeing the sun over the clouds over Rangitoto, thinking what a fantastic city we live in.
Thinking, look at that, it's the world's biggest pahutukawa forest. Right there on Rangitoto, do you know that?
Yeah. It's an amazing place. It's only about 700 years old. It's since it emerged from the sea, apparently.
And now it hogs the view everywhere.
Yeah. Well, it's really one of the iconic symbols of Auckland, and fantastic place to walk right up the top and past the lava flows.
No good in bare feet or jandals, though.
No. Definitely take some pretty solid walking or tramping shoes. It would be my recommendation.
Must be hard not to sit there and just admire all the jewels of the city, Phil. But I mean, on a day like today, I guess as the mayor of a major metropolitan city, you look over at what's happened in Manchester and wonder. I'm sure you know, have utmost sympathy for all those that are trying to deal with that, but also are all the ducks in a row in our town for not necessarily a terrorism attack, but you know, just disasters or something going not to plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just sitting looking at the front page of the New Zealand Herald with a poor kid with half a clothes ripped off, bandages on, looking shocked, being helped out of the arena by the police. And you just ask yourself, what is in the head of any person that thinks that something can be achieved by blowing yourself up and taking with you the lives of a whole lot of young people, innocent of any offence at all, who are simply there at a concert enjoying the music. And, you know, I put the responsibility on the individual first and foremost,
yep.
Though I think that probably they are a deeply mentally, psychologically disturbed person with screwed up personality traits. You know, it's not first and foremost about ideology or religion or anything else. It's about a nutcase. That's all you can say the person is. And the difficulty with that is that means those individuals can exist anywhere in the world and therefore nowhere is safe. The second responsibility I put on ISIS because they're the cretins that go around encouraging vulnerable and mentally disturbed people to commit an act like that with the promise that this somehow gives them life and eternity. You know, what really annoys me about that is that they use the name of God and their Bible, the Quran, and nowhere in that religion does it justify actions like this. And most Muslim people in New Zealand and internationally are absolutely appalled at what happens. So what do we do to stop it?
I agree with everything you just said, but the in a situation like that, the whoever was your counterpart in Manchester, there's no time for emotion. You need to motivate. You need to get things need to happen immediately. So I mean, that must be a good sort of check for you as well. You must be sort of thinking, what would I have done in that situation?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know that you can actually point the finger at the local authorities or the government or the police. For allowing that to happen.
Once it's happened, you know, unpredicted event of a magnitude like that that causes that much of a of an incident, and you know, there's certain, you know, certain things that need to happen and need to happen straight away.
Yeah, well, you see, the problem is, I mean, on a lot of these things now, you probably go through metal detectors, but this guy blew himself up, as I understand it, in the foyer outside the arena, between that and between Victoria Station. So he probably couldn't have been stopped for that reason. He might have been under watch of their security intelligence service. But you know that has been effective in the past at stopping a lot of these acts, because these guys usually in some way give an indication of their state of mind and their danger, but I guess there'll be a report in due course as to whether they knew of this individual and whether they had warning of him. He was British born, grew up in Manchester, from a refugee family, ironically a family escaping persecution in Libya, and then I think the third thing, Mikey, is What do you do? What can you do to create an environment where this doesn't happen? Now, what my big worry is if the reaction to this is to blame refugees and Muslims, then you actually create the atmosphere where you actually generate the environment where you can create more people that are vulnerable to this sort of behaviour. And I know for a fact that you know, whenever we've had problems with a tiny, tiny minority in New Zealand, it's the community, the refugee or the Muslim community, that have been the first to come to the police or to the government or the intelligence service and say, we're worried about this individual.
Yeah.
So what you do is you create an environment where you say, and I think, you know, we're not perfect in Auckland or New Zealand, but we by and large have a live and let live atmosphere here. We, you know, we respect people's right to be different, to belong to a different religion, to, you know, to behave in different ways as long as they're not hurting other individuals. So probably the best safeguard for New Zealand is to maintain that community where nobody, we don't alienate anybody, we don't persecute anybody, and we're an inclusive society. That probably is our best safeguard, you know, overall.
Good answer, Phil Goff. Ooh, good answer. That's exactly.
Sorry, bit long.
That's
what I believe about it.
I think that's a great thing to say. As far as preparedness, is it possible to be prepared for something like that?
Well, you know, I was a parliamentarian for many years, and I sat in for a period of time on the Security Intelligence Service Committee. And, you know, on one hand, we worry that the Security Intelligence Service doesn't take undue powers over the lives of its citizenry and be unnecessarily intrusive into people's privacy. At the same time, you have to have one to detect, you know, sometimes it's criminal action, sometimes it's international espionage, and sometimes it's things as straightforward as, you know, individuals in the community that could present a risk to us. So, you know, I think by and large our parliament has found that balance, and I've been refreshed by the fact that we've got a new inspector of the Security Intelligence Service. I know she dealt with a case that I was involved in when the head of the Security Intelligence Service had a crack at me, and she came out and she rubbished the guy, and if he was still in the position, he would have been sacked. So I've got some confidence that the independent safeguards over the Security Intelligence Service are pretty good. I'd like to see stronger parliamentary scrutiny of it, not just the government, but a genuine cross-party scrutiny. But, you know, again, like most things in life, I don't know whether it's just as I get more and more experience of life, I think, you know, the answer lies in balance there.
Yeah.
But you have to have something to keep an eye on people who may have international contacts. We know that ISIS, some of the rubbish that they put through, encouraging people to, you know, use cars as weapons against individuals. You've got to have something to track down who those individuals might be and what risk they might present.
I guess you've got to also ask, you know, what gets an individual into a place where all he needs to do is be sort of urged to do something like that, and they'll go and do it. You know, it's just a lot of us could be, you know, told that every day for the rest of our lives, and we're not going to go and do it. But
no, and we'd totally, you know, turn on the person making the suggestion. These people, I reckon, if you did a psychological profile of them, they would be loners. They would be people who have deep-seated emotional problems, and even their connection to their family, their community is poor. And, you know, sometimes people are just bloody psychopaths.
There is that psychopath thing of, like, I'm just notoriety in general. People think it's cool to be known, you know, and if that's what it takes. Hey,
yeah,
Phil,
just make one more comment on that. That guy that was involved in the Moors murder,
perfect example.
Deliberately forgotten his name, but I read the I read the online stuff about that guy, and that was truly frightening. Here was a guy that said, "I'm not bound by any rules, any morality, any values. I can do whatever pleases me." And what pleased him and his girlfriend was to go out and murder seven kids who were, you know, who just for the thrill of the killing and the abuse of the kids. And that stuff, you know, talk about silence of the lambs. You know, that's the stuff I find really freaky and really quite frightening. There are individuals like that, and when you identify them, provided you do it under law, those are the people that have to be watched closely all the time, and when they are convicted of a crime, where you have to consider preventive detention, where you simply lock them up. Brady is the guy, I didn't want to mention his name, but that guy was rightly locked up until his dying day, and that guy is... that represents the sort of personality that is a real threat to our civilization, our society, our community.
Exactly. Now, Phil, I wanted to ask you, we're less than 4 months away from an election, a national election, but no, it's not something for the city council to worry about. But as a region, what do you think, what do you suggest that we take into account when it comes to casting our vote? The general election, well, you know, is that something you should do? Should you be taking, hey, hang on, what's good for Auckland?
The broader view that we all take is, you know, what is good for our country, what's good for our community. But as Aucklanders, we're 36% of the country's population, and we've got some pretty big issues on our plate. We kind of, on one hand, like the fact that we are a global city, internationally competitive, that we've got the scale to give us choice and opportunity. What we really hate, and I hate it every morning and every evening, is getting caught up.
Traffic!
Yeah, bloody congestion. You know, I came in at 5:45 this morning. It still took me 50 minutes, and we were down to, you know, sometimes 20k an hour on the motorway. Sometimes we were stopped, and that's before 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, and again last night, you know, 7 o'clock. I went home at 7 o'clock last night, and you know, I leave it late deliberately so I don't have to fight the traffic. It took me 15 minutes even to get to the motorway on Hobson Street. If I could catch a train or a bus, I would, but I live in an area that's served by neither. So, you know, as Aucklanders, we're worried about that, and we're worried about the price and the affordability of housing and the scale of the house build at the moment. We've got a budget tomorrow. You know what I'd really love to think? You know, this is a triumph of hope over expectation. I'd love to think that the Minister of Finance would say, well, we're looking at building up a surplus in the next couple of years of maybe up to $5 to $8 billion. How am I going to spend that? I know what New Zealand really needs. They need decent infrastructure, so we've got a good public transport system, and we've got the infrastructure to enable enough houses to be built, and the area that suffers most from that's Auckland. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a priority on infrastructure build, because I know it not only causes frustration for Aucklanders, but it actually costs the country $3 billion a year in lost productivity from congestion alone. Now, that's what I'd really like from the government tomorrow. I don't know, you know, I won't.
When you put it like that, they better have a pretty good reason not to do that.
Well, it's logic, and you know, I've seen a lot of talking the talk of the need for infrastructure, and ministers and the Prime Minister saying, look, we understand Auckland's problems. You can't rate people to death. You've reached the limit of your borrowing. We need to work with you. We need to collaborate. We need to solve this problem together. And that's the approach that I'm taking. So, you know, what am I doing? First of all, I'm not taking a partisan stance at the election. Everybody knows I'm a Labor Party person. I've been a Member of Parliament for 32 years for Labor.
We gleaned that.
Yep. You gleaned that, but equally you need to know that my approach to government and to the elections is not a partisan one. It's going to be on the basis of advocacy for Auckland. I'm not going to set out to ambush or attack the government. I am going to be putting pressure on the government and all of the political parties to say, we need you to show a preparedness to work with us, to give us ways that we can raise revenue ourselves, if need be, to address the critical problems that Auckland faces.
Otherwise, we're going to take our ball and go home.
Otherwise, you're going to piss off, over a third of the electorate of the country, and no political party should be of a mindset that they want to do that. We're not asking for anything that's undue or unfair or special treatment. We're asking for treatment that matches the rate of growth that the city is facing. That seems to me to be fair.
Mayor of Auckland, Phil Gough, thank you very much for talking to BFM this morning. Speak to you next week.
Thanks, Mikey. Look forward to it. Cheers, mate.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.